far.
Previously, in A Fond Kiss by Alice Dale, Craig was told nothing more could be done for him at Buckland Hospital and he must leave to make room for urgent cases. His mind in turmoil about leaving the safety of the hospital, as well as leaving Pamela, whose love he now doubted, Craig returned to Scotland. Unable to tell his mother of his feelings, conversation was difficult.
Because Pippa and Craig had so little to share when they sat together in the evenings, they tried filling the long silences by listening to the wireless.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's unavoidable, it's inescapable, it's Thursday, it's that man again. Time cannot wither, nor custom stale his infinite variety. And who is it who ne'er o'erstepped the boundaries of propriety?
And were pitifully grateful to Tommy Handley, who made them laugh with him. And the sonorous voice of Valentine Dial, the man in black, for introducing plays of murder and mystery.
I was sick, sick unto death with that long agony. And when they at length unbound me, and I was permitted to sit.
Once, with the radio off, and Craig steeped in dark thoughts of his future, he had looked across at his mother, ostensibly reading a book, and saw her stemming tears that were trickling down her pretty face. He had to remind himself she was only going on 44, and she too had lost someone she loved. He knew he should be comforting her, not adding to her misery. But his guilt only spawned anger with himself, and his anger added to her confusion and feelings of inadequacy. Near the end of April, Pippa said, "When I picked up your dry cleaning today, Mr. McGlashan said he found this in your jacket pocket. Fortunately, before it was cleaned." And she handed him the referral to Dr. Tom Gibson at Glasgow Royal Infirmary. Dr. Roberts had emphasised the urgency of this case, giving a glowing description of Craig as a patient. "Have you contacted this man yet?" "No," Craig snapped back. Then, seeing his mother's perplexed expression, he pulled himself together. "I'm sorry. I've just had a lot on my mind. I'll deliver this tomorrow by hand." "That's a great idea," she said, beaming broadly. This led him to telling her about the possibilities of skin transplants. Her reaction was the same amazement he had experienced at first, and suddenly they had something to talk about. Although he and Pamela had exchanged addresses, he was convinced that it was like holiday friends who never follow it up. Her words were etched forever on his mind.
"But you must be the first to write."
Yet, although his hands had healed enough to grip a pen, he never picked one up or tried to write. Beautiful women who loved deformed or ugly men were creatures of fiction. And loving people for what they are inside was a fallacy. And what could he offer her? He had been called up straight from school, had trained for nothing except to fly Spitfires. He had no idea how long the war would last, and he'd already been turned down for the two jobs he'd applied for, first as a cinema cashier and then as a hotel commissionaire. Both interviewers had been kind, But when they heard he still needed more skin grafts, they used that as an excuse. Both told him not to rush things, to wait till all that was over. But he was sure they were afraid his appearance might offend their patrons. As he still had some difficulty bending his fingers totally, he was of no use in a munitions factory or anything else that required dexterity. Meantime, he had to live on his ex-serviceman's pension, which he handed over to his mother for his keep. This was always followed by the ritual of her returning it, saying she didn't need it, and him pushing it back into her hand. Finally, she persuaded him to accept half for pocket money. He loved Pam too much to expect her to give away her career, where she was so desperately needed, to come to a useless, unemployed man who wasn't even good-looking anymore and live on what? Half a pension with no hope of a job? But suddenly, he determined to increase his chances of employment and eagerly accepted Dr. Gibson's offer of starting the skin transplants right away. He was told of the time it would take and the pain involved, which he accepted. But the reality was worse than he had imagined. He hadn't expected to feel more pain in the area where the healthy skin had been removed than where it was transplanted to. And after several stints in hospital, he kept himself confined to the house, and his depression returned. He and his sister Irene had always been close, but even she was unable to cheer him up. And when those friends of his mother's came for Saturday morning coffee, if you could call camp coffee that, he would always stay in his bedroom with a book. Although he couldn't make out everything that was said, he would occasionally hear his name, and he knew they were discussing him. Sometimes he would pick up phrases. Oh dear, what a pity. Such a fine man, too. It must be very worrying for you, Philippa, etc. He looked forward to Saturday afternoons when his mother went to the pictures with her friend Iris, and he could relax on his own, away from prying eyes or well-meant advice. And then a letter arrived addressed to Flight Lieutenant Craig Stebbings. Recognising Pamela's writing, Pippa was delighted. It was the first one from her since his return, which had puzzled her. Now, smiling, she brought it to him. "Here's something to make your day," she said as she handed it over. His stomach heaved, his heartbeat doubled and raced into his throat. And to his intense discomfort, there was a rush of blood to his face. "Are you all right?" "Don't worry. It's from Pamela. I'd know her handwriting anywhere." "But it's not addressed to me. It's addressed to you."
"No, no. There's no point."
He jumped up, threw down the envelope, and as he rushed out the room, shouted angrily over his shoulder, "Burn it!" "But you haven't even op—" She was left in the middle of their council house sitting room, shaking her head hopelessly. Craig's anger now took the form of brooding. He had become sullen, not only due to the pain of the skin grafts, but also because his lower face was constantly covered in dressings that embarrassed him. So he refused to go out anywhere. Even when his treatments finally ended, Pippa was still worried about Craig and his future. When she tried discussing his problems with women friends, they all seemed to say things that didn't help. The most stupid one coming from a young colleague who offered, "Just stop worrying about him. He'll be fine." Beautifully vague, like Jenny McGrath herself. Pippa wondered how that girl had ever acquired a teaching diploma. As head of the English department, Pippa was responsible for her achievements, or lack of them. Having read some samples of a student's essays, she could see their grammar was sadly lacking. In stricter times, Jenny would have been dismissed, but no school could afford to lose a teacher in these difficult times. Her thoughts turned to Craig. If only she could stop worrying about him. But how was that possible? Every morning when she left him at home, she was worrying about how he would get through the day alone in the house. And every evening when she put the key in the door, she was terrified she'd find him with his head in the gas oven. She felt the tears coming again, and head down she pressed her hanky against her eyes while walking swiftly along the school corridor towards the doors that would allow her to escape back to her son. "Oh, my God!" she exclaimed as she bumped into an obstacle in front of her. David...
I'm so sorry, but I wasn't looking where I...
Then stopped. Lifting her chin gently and looking into her tear-stained eyes, he asked softly...
What's the matter? What's happened, Pippa?